think one of the overall challenges is that there's no one single source of legislation or regulation in relation to any of this.
If you don't speak truthfully or say things that you can really back up, then at the end of the day, you are not contributing to the solution, you're contributing to the problem.
And I guess it's a moving feast all the time, isn't it? So what is acceptable one month may not be a few months later. So I guess that's part of the challenge, keeping up to date with what is and what isn't acceptable to be able to talk about.
Don't be cowed into silence is definitely a message that I'd really like to put out there. Be bold, say the things that you can prove, but just make sure that you can prove them.
Hello, and welcome to our new Business But Better podcast brought to you by Owen Mitchell. I'm Charlotte Rees-John, Head of Retail, Leisure and Hospitality Sector at Owen Mitchell, and I'll be your host for this podcast series. This podcast tackles the big issues affecting your business, bringing you stories and advice from across the industry so you can do business but better. In this series, we'll focus on the environmental, social and governance issues affecting companies both across the UK and worldwide. Today, we're discussing greenwashing. I'm joined by two experts as we discuss what greenwashing looks like, who's already received backlash, and how you can avoid being accused of it. Firstly, I'd like to welcome my Owen Mitchell colleague and resident greenwashing expert, Georgie Collins. Georgie helps businesses navigate issues when it comes to reputation, defamation, privacy, and crisis management. I'd also like to extend a very warm welcome to our special guest, Duncan Spark, director at agency Man Bites Dog and co-chair of the CIPR's ESG panel. Greenwashing is a term that describes organisations who mislead the public about their environmental impact. As customers and stakeholders hold businesses to greater account for their behaviour, greenwashing has the potential for enormous financial and reputational damage. On that note, shall we move on to questions? And I've got first one for you, Duncan, today. I thought just to set the scene, if you could tell us in a bit more detail about what greenwashing is and what the risks are around greenwashing.
Well, thank you for that kind introduction. Greenwashing, I guess, can be defined in a lot of different ways. But for the purposes of simplicity, it's ultimately an organisation talking about their credentials or the work that they're doing and the sustainability of that in a way that they can't really substantiate with facts.
Okay.
In terms of why it's so important, this could be a very long answer, but I'll keep it relatively succinct. It's really about representing the reality of the role that you play as an organisation in solving what is ultimately one of the biggest problems that we as a planet face. If you are actively taking steps to improve your sustainability, to reduce things like your carbon emissions, that's really important. And the extent to which you reflect that in things like your marketing communications is a really clear window for the rest of the world to see how you're performing. If you don't speak truthfully or say things that you can really back up, then at the end of the day, you are not contributing to the solution, you're contributing to the problem.
Can you give us some examples that will bring that to life?
There are lots of different examples. The most straightforward example from a year or two ago was probably Delta Airlines. They had a really straightforward ad that they put out that just said, we are introducing carbon neutral flights. They weren't able to prove that their flights were carbon neutral, as with anyone in the airline industry in particular. Being carbon neutral is incredibly difficult because there are huge amounts of pollution from aviation fuel. They had taken steps to offset that, but the credentials of offsetting are slightly questionable at best. And the fact that that was their justification for being carbon neutral just ultimately didn't stack up. There are much more subtle examples as well. I think one that was possibly a little bit on the harsh side, but nevertheless interesting from a kind of looking back perspective, was Oatly. Oatly suggested they produce 73% less carbon emissions than other milks, which if you make a direct comparison between Oatly and dairy milk within the UK, with a few other caveats, is broadly true. But that wasn't what they said. They said other milks. And that's a much more ambiguous statement. And without those caveats, without being specific about what you mean by that, it was deemed to be greenwashing. So you can get caught out for things that are relatively subtle as well.
Yeah, I think that Oatly example is a bit scary in terms of it's quite a subtle example and how it shows how easy it is to get it wrong. I would bring you in there, Georgie. Have you got any other examples?
What I tend to see is in most cases, it's not intentional where businesses get themselves into trouble. The example of Oatly is they tried to do the right thing, and often businesses will carry out, you know, their due diligence. They will try and benchmark what they're doing relative to the claims they're making. The broader the claims, the more detailed the due diligence needs to be. And sometimes they go a bit too broad. And I think it's a real challenge for a business when, you know, they've looked at certain certification standards. They're often taking advice, whether it's legal advice or they're going to, you know, an advertising clearance agency to help them with their promotional advertising. And yet they still get it wrong. There are more rulings through the Advertising Standards Agency where they've gone against the advertiser than there are those that they've deemed, you know, can continue. And I think that tells a story.
I think one of the interesting things that you were mentioning there was around claims saying that they're offsetting. And you often see that, don't you? So we're doing really well because every time we do this, we plant a tree or we do something to offset the emissions. Do you find that that's quite a common mistake that people are making when they're talking about their green credentials? Do you think people are getting more savvy to that? Are thinking, hang on a minute, is that really green?
I think I definitely, yeah. It's really complicated because to offset your emissions isn't something which is kind of strictly not allowed. It is useful, it helps. But for it to be kind of a big part of how you're getting rid of your emissions, if we're talking exclusively about kind of that carbon transition piece, then it's not really enough. Also, the kind of the credits you can buy to offset, they vary in quality depending on who you speak to. So you can buy sort of credits which are probably broadly pretty good. You can buy other credits that are maybe a little bit less credible. And the measurement behind it is also just really difficult. To what extent is that tree that's planted actually going to absorb carbon from the air? There are parameters. You can judge it roughly, but you don't really know if that tree happens to get cut down in 30 years' time by somebody else who's bought the land. Then the potential that you were offsetting by planting it has partly, maybe largely, been lost. It's very complicated. And the most direct way to have an impact is actually just to reduce your emissions in the activities that you undertake as an organisation.
And I guess it's a moving feast all the time, isn't it? So what is acceptable 1 month may not be a few months later. So I guess that's part of the challenge, keeping up to date with what is and what isn't acceptable to be able to talk about that might be considered to be problematic.
Yeah.
So we've talked obviously about what greenwashing is and some great examples there. Thank you. But what are the potential risks for me as a business owner? What could happen?
It's an interesting question. So there are really direct risks. So if you put out an advert, you will risk being fined. And those fines can be quite substantial. They can range into the millions, depending on...
Yeah, pretty substantial.
You also potentially risk your advert being banned, and then you lose all the investment you put into the advert as well, which can be quite substantial in itself. That's the kind of more direct piece. I would also argue that from a reputational standpoint, you risk greater damage still than the financial costs of all of the fines and all of the lost revenues combined, because from a reputational point of view, we as a group of consumers are getting increasingly savvy. And if it makes a big splash, then it can have quite a big impact on people's perception of your brand and your organization, and therefore make them think twice about whether they might want to go to you or your competitors.
So do you think it is the consumer that's driving a lot of the behaviours, or is it the fear of fines? Which do you think is being outweighed?
I would say ultimately, because it comes down to personal responsibility in your job role, if you are the person that has signed off that advert and you get a massive fine, you're probably likely to see that as the biggest threat to you. Organisationally and reputationally, that piece is probably more important, but it depends who you are within the organisation, where the responsibility lies, where the buck stops. There is a third piece, I think, which is really important as well, which is just employees. Whilst an organisation might suffer reputationally and may lose revenue and sales if they're seen to be greenwashing, we have quite a proactive employee base, particularly in the UK, I think. And if you are being accused of greenwashing in a very public way, then it's likely that a lot of the people that work within your company might think twice about the values and the purpose of your organisation and whether they want to be a part of that. And that could potentially be the biggest cost of all, because talent is increasingly scarce.
Yeah, and I think that is also the case from a recruitment perspective, because you've named some of those big high-profile cases. And, you know, employees now are increasingly making their decisions as to where they move to, who they want to be employed by, based on their values. So I think that is a really, really interesting point. So, Georgie, in terms of the legalities around this, talk us a bit more through the litigation risks for businesses around greenwashing.
So I think one of the overall challenges is that there's no one single source of legislation or regulation in relation to any of this. There's all sorts of, even going back to the very beginning of the conversation with Duncan, there's no single definition of greenwashing. Everyone kind of sort of understands what it is, but, you know, there's no one single code as such. And the regulation is developing and evolving, you know, as we speak now, in terms of what's coming down the channel at the moment. So I think businesses struggle with, actually, what am I regulated by? What governs it? What are the tests? Certainly the scope for litigation for businesses, and here you're focusing on those bigger corporates who are misstating their green credentials, and that's usually through more disclosures. So reporting the annual report, financial reporting more than, say, marketing, are more likely to get themselves into trouble. Even this week, that there's reports that a number of corporates are concerned in relation to what their ESG credentials have or haven't been stated as, particularly around greenwashing, and what they've been saying in terms of their targets, in terms of carbon zero, what their carbon footprint is, and what they're going to do about that. And actually, can that be substantiated? And I think as you're getting a consumer base which is becoming a bit more savvy about this, is understanding it, is wanting businesses to do the right thing, that's putting more pressure onto corporates. So I think there is much more of a fear in the boardroom around what's the horizon looking at for litigation, and absolutely ESG greenwashing is on that list. We're seeing now more here than we have before compared to the US of shareholder activism rising up against corporates in relation to what they think is the misstatement of their green credentials.
So just a slight change of direction. I've got a question for you. Yes, no answer. So product digital product passports, easy for me to say, digital product passports, are they the end of greenwashing?
Nope.
No.
Sadly not.
Okay, so obviously I'm going to have to ask why. Do either of you want to elaborate?
It's complicated again. And the regulation at the moment is only at that sort of proposed stage. There was talk that it was going to be introduced this year. Whether it will be or not, I don't know. There's discussion between the EU Commission and Parliament here in terms of how that might work together. If it only becomes in as EU legislation, then UK businesses will still need to be concerned if they are, you know, marketing products in and selling products in Europe. But at the moment, where they've got to is they have identified 17 industries which they think should, you know, be looking at this type of digital passport. But the criteria that you would look at for those digital passports are not the same, because how you might treat a chemical giant compared to a textiles company is quite different. So when you're looking at the base of, particularly around supply chain, they're going to be different. The metrics are different. And that's kind of got to be worked out in focus groups. So if you're thinking just 17 industries there, we're looking some years down the line. And it's not going to cover every single industry either. There's some absolute key targets, which we've seen in terms of the action that the ASA has been taking in relation to green claims. So fashion and textiles, really high on the agenda, chemicals, energy. But there's lots of other industries too, which aren't within the remit of that at the moment and don't necessarily fall within that camp of what's the supply chain, but there still could be a misstatement in relation to the greenness or otherwise of the claims they're making. So it's not a fix. And it's really directed to products, not necessarily services. So it's what you can go and buy and hold in your hand or get delivered through the postbox.
I will happily pick up the baton just there. I think there's a really kind of contextual economic piece to it. The word product is really important within the digital product passport. I think 81% of the UK economy is services, which immediately diminishes the level of impact that the DPP can possibly have. I mean, I should clarify, it's definitely a good thing. It's something which is helping to make progress. There's lots of complexities around it, and I will defer to you in terms of the merits of those. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for it to make an impact. But yeah, the fact that it only affects products is a challenge. But also the fact that food is excluded from it for the foreseeable future feels like a challenge. I think something like 10% of the UK economy is sort of retail and wholesale. Big portion of that, I don't know exactly how much, is obviously food. So that's another area where we're not necessarily going to be able to see the impact. There's also a really kind of subtle challenge that comes with DPPs, which is just the amount of data that is required in order to validate and track them. It uses blockchain technology, which is relatively data intensive in itself. Data centers are about 4% of global emissions in their own right. There is a question, I don't know if anyone's asked it, but there's a question around whether all of that data that is going to be required to support DPPs, if they are rolled out at scale, is going to have a wholly positive influence on sustainability at large.
In terms of within an organization, who's taking responsibility for greenwashing? Do you see any, is it all on marketing? Because it seems like pretty heavy burden to shoulder. What are you seeing within organizations?
For me, it's a kind of a two-tier process. If they've not been caught out, then probably marketing, the buck stops with them to make sure that they're not doing it. That said, I don't really know of any marketing teams that have been trained in this in a structured, sophisticated way. They might have had it mentioned to them. Something that we're doing as part of the CIPR ESG panel is to produce the resources that marketers can use in order to be more careful and do their due diligence around what they should and shouldn't be saying. But that's not really something that's built into marketing role at the moment. Organizations can take it upon themselves to do a bit of due diligence on their own teams, but there's no guarantee that that's how it will translate. And then usually when organizations, particularly those maybe in the energy sector, who are much more conscious of greenwashing because they're much more likely to be exposed to it. For those guys, then typically the legal team gets heavily involved and everything that the marketing team do is usually then fed through the legal team as a sort of second check on everything, which from a marketing standpoint can be troublesome because there's a lot of caution there. Ultimately, the legal team's job is to avoid risk a lot of the time, which can involve vetoing a lot of things. And that obviously has its own challenges when it comes to things like actually collaborating, communicating about sustainability between organizations to make more progress at large. So
pesky lawyers, we're always spoiling everything. But so do you think that is a real risk? Because, you know, I can appreciate that we've talked a lot about the risks, fines, reputationally, from an employee recruitment, retention perspective. Is there a risk that this focus on greenwashing is going to lead to progress being hindered, people being afraid to be bold, to take bigger steps or to communicate the steps that they're taking?
Yes. I think I need to be very careful how I articulate this because this conversation has a lot of grey areas to it. But I think ultimately, shying away from the risk of greenwashing can and does have the impact of reducing the amount that you say about sustainability. A lot of organizations, Unilever being a good example of somebody who's been called out for greenwashing relatively recently, but is probably further along than most on their sustainability journey. That's going to have the impact of closing down their ability to share the progress they've made, the steps they've taken, and then help the industry share knowledge, share best practice, collaborate on what those solutions might be. And without that, progress will inevitably be slower. It's definitely a challenge, but it's also one that is navigable. We call it green hushing when an organization is specifically hiding their light under a bushel when it comes to all of the good sustainability work that they're doing. And I think the line between greenhushing and greenwashing is one that isn't impossible to walk by any means. You can still communicate well and tell your story without straying into greenwashing, but it does require a lot more knowledge, a lot more understanding, particularly around the regulatory landscape and the litigation risks. So it's not the end of the world, but for a lot of organisations that maybe don't have all of the skills in their marketing team, it can be a massive restraint, yes.
Finally, to help us wrap up, if you had a summary message to marketing teams around green credentials, what would it be?
Don't exaggerate. Be careful with your imagery. So green, leaf-type objects, trees, you know, symbols that suggest, you know, recyclability. Understand your business. And I think just building a little bit on what Duncan said there, there's a real collective responsibility in business. It's not just legal's job. It's not just marketing's job. It's the business to understand. And that comes from the top down. There'll be people in a business who understand the supply chain of what's going on. Marketing might not necessarily know, legal will not necessarily know unless they all collaborate and work together. So I think there is a need. There's definitely a need for training, but for businesses to understand how they pull themselves together to better educate themselves of where they're not going to fall down. Create a dossier. When you're going through your checklist, you're making your claims, work to the Green Claims Code as a starting point, assemble your evidence, have it in a pack, you're ready in case the ASA says, we don't like this, we, you know, we think you've misstated what you're saying, and you've started to substantiate your comments there.
I think Georgie's covered the really important stuff, but ultimately I think it don't be cowed into silence is definitely a message that I'd really like to put out there. Be bold, say the things that you can prove, but just make sure that you can prove them, and then tell your story and encourage others to do the same. I think telling stories is really important. Avoiding that is going to be really costly. So be really clear, don't hold back, and hopefully reap the rewards of the great work that you're doing as an organisation.
I think that's really useful advice. Thank you both. I've certainly learned a lot today, so I'm sure our listeners and our audience have as well. I'm interested to keep the conversation going. So could you help us with that, Duncan? We've got our next guest coming along for our podcast, and it'd be great if you could pose a question for them around ESG. If you had one question that you could ask them, what would it be?
I think a great starting point for any conversation is what are the steps that you as an organisation have taken recently along your own sustainability journey, particularly the ones that maybe you're most proud of?
That's great. Thanks, Duncan. I'm really looking forward to seeing how our next guest is doing business but better. And thanks, Georgie, for sharing your stories with us today. And to our audience, thank you for joining us. But before you go, make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any more of our podcast series and get to listen to talking about the business issues that matter to you. I hope you can join us for the next episode. Bye for now.